Hey guys, welcome to episode 227 of the JB Club with my guest, Ariel Waldman. I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. And Ariel made the point after we stopped recording that I referenced the fact that she and I did Star Talk together up here at SF Sketchfest and that it would probably be quite some time before that episode were available. So I just want to echo that in this intro and say, don't get too excited about listening to that because it probably won't be out for a while. But please do check out all of her wonderful work. You can see tons of stuff online. And I just want to say I hope everybody had an interesting, inspiring inauguration weekend, whatever that means to you. Sketchfest was interesting and a totally different dynamic because of it and because of some intense weather. So for those of you who are here in town in San Francisco, you know what I'm talking about. But I also am looking forward to seeing some of you at the live JV Club episode this final weekend of SF Sketchfest as we get into our third weekend stretch. And I want to thank for your emails, Ben, James, and Jordan. I'm behind in checking Facebook and stuff, but and certainly very behind in looking at Twitter. But I wanted to get those out there to you, and I will talk to you very soon. Thanks.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh, I like that. I just heard a little it was like let's crack into this. Let's just
getting the day started.
I'm just gonna I don't think any of my bits and pieces crack the way I kind of wish they were. Like, that was something I was jealous of when I would see people cracking their knuckles. It seemed like a skill, like a skill set, like a useful skill. I'm not sure.
Maybe.
What, but then that sort of brings you into the like chiropractor kind of like that immediately for me triggers the sort of like, is it good for us to really like, some of it does, it just feels so good to
well
feel,
you know,
that
like
kind
cracking
of pop,
your
like,
joints is just like kind of the release of nitrogen between them, so.
But what about how do you feel about chiropractors? You know, this is an all chiropractor
are,
podcast.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all I talk about.
No, I think the ones that are not so hippie-esque are perfectly fine. I've had to see chiropractors in the past that have helped me, but I don't like going to the chiropractors that are, you know, here's some colored water to, you know, help your aura, or, you know, like what, like
colored
I can't
water.
Stand that, or, you know, so I only go to ones that are pretty much on the scientific side, which are unfortunately, you know, difficult to find, but but they exist.
Well, it's one of those kind of interesting sort of nebulous divisive practices, right, where certain medical practitioners say none of it is real, and then certain people are like, it's incredibly real, there's absolutely medical evidence that it's useful. It's like it's funny that in this day and age it's this thing that still has this, like, it hovers in between somehow.
And it's unfortunate because, you know, because sometimes, you know, if you're in a car accident or something, you do need sort of to be readjusted, and you can actually look at x-rays and see you've gotten a bit out of
this
whack.
Clearly isn't a tinkered with
health issues before where like it needed a chiropractor, and I wasn't going to, you know, feel better about myself or my aura, you know.
Which also, listen, if that also makes people feel better and conduct themselves better as human beings in the world, I mean, I can't argue with it in terms of like whatever floats your boat.
Yeah,
as long as you end up a more productive member of our society. I don't know, like I is that something that you grew up kind of being? Where did you grow up, by the way?
Kansas.
Okay.
Yep.
How exposed to religion and sort of, for to use your term, hippy dippiness, were you exposed when you were younger?
So
versus
I grew
like
up,
science, atheism.
Yeah,
or, you know.
I mean, my family isn't religious, and I grew up without religion, and I was perfectly happy with that, and I still am.
Did you, were you, is that an area where there's a lot of I don't know Kansas very well, so I don't.
I think, you know, in the suburbs of Kansas City, which is where I grew up, I think it's sort of like a liberal oasis amongst Kansas.
Yeah.
So,
I guess I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, so it didn't feel, you know, overly religious. You know, I knew some people who went to church, but you're not in the Bible Belt, which sort of starts kind of directly south, like in Oklahoma or something. So, yeah, it didn't feel weird or anything. But that said, you know, my parents are definitely more hippie-esque than I am, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. What did they do?
So my mom was a yoga teacher while I was growing up, and my dad...
Also a very reasonable, like, beneficial... Lots of good stuff comes from yoga.
Yeah, and I mean, I always hated it growing up because, you know, I couldn't subscribe to anything really that my parents were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
So she was a yoga teacher, and my dad is a furniture designer, but he was really into doing Tai Chi and, you know, all that sort of thing. So, yeah.
And again, were you like, did you have that experience of being the embarrassed teen? Like, oh, you guys, please.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. You know, and they still do it to this day. Ariel, you know, don't burn your candle at both ends.
I mean, they didn't name you Ariel. That's sort of an ethereal.
Yeah, I was named after a cartoon, although not the Little Mermaid. It was, what was it? Thunder the Barbarian had a sidekick named Ariel.
Yep.
That's what I was named after.
Wow. So they love their big comics fans, at least
of
that one.
I think it's like they just saw a cartoon and she had like long dark hair and rode horses. And my parents were like, yeah, sure, that'll be our kid.
Sure.
Like,
it's a very pleasant name. Mm-hmm. Although you may have now been subjected to a lot of Little Mermaid references.
Yeah, you know, growing up, I hated the name because, you know, when you're a little kid, you feel self-conscious about everything. So, you know, I was growing up and kids would be like, where are your fins, Ariel? Where's Flounder? Where's your red hair? And I'd be like, shut up. Don't bother me.
I can't believe you were bullied based off of the plot of Little Mermaid.
Teased is definitely more it. And, you know, yeah, when you're little, you're just like, anything that thrown your way, you don't yet have, you know, your confidence built up. And so you're like, they're making fun of me and I hate my name. And so it took me probably until I was a teenager to actually appreciate my name.
Did you have like a secret name that you wished was your name?
Oh, I had different ones.
Yeah.
Like, I think maybe Alexis was one for a while. And then like, oh, my mom likes to remind me, this was when I was a little kid, like that I wanted my name to be Misty for a while because I had read a book and it was about horses and there was a horse named Misty and I was like, that'd be cool.
Yeah. These are the way things get into our heads.
Yeah.
I know I wanted my name to be Erin, E-R-I-N, when I was like, you know, 10-ish, like 8 to 10, 11. I have no idea why. Like, I don't have, I mean... Maybe my dad's best friends were sort of like family I grew up around. Their older daughter was named Erin, but I don't remember idolizing her or anything. And that's the only person I can think of I even knew who had that name.
Yeah.
Nor was it like, it's not like it was like, whatever the like hot teen, whatever, like, you know what I mean? Because when you're little, if you're, that's kind of the age, the prepubescence where it seems like what teenagers are doing are cool.
Yeah.
And there wasn't even something
so
like that
old.
Where it's like, everyone remembers that famous actress, Erin, blah, blah, blah. Like, I just don't know where I got that. But I was flipping through a really old little kid journal that I had. And I saw that I had like written a story about myself as this person. And I was like, what was I? Who? Why?
Yeah.
Misty.
Yeah. No. Yeah, that was when I was little girl.
Yeah.
No,
did you like horses?
Yeah, like growing up, I rode horses and,
nice.
You know, I hated dolls, loved animals. I remember, you know, I was going to like hate anyone who ever gave me a doll for my birthday. And I would tell my friends, again, this was like when I was a child, not a teenager, but like I would tell my friends, you know, don't get me a doll. And then I remember I had this one birthday party where I invited this girl that I didn't know very well from school to my birthday party, and she gave me a doll for my birthday, and I just about wanted to murder her.
Which is like, she brought you a present, totally thoughtful. You didn't even know her that well. She got you a gift. How dare she get
like,
you a doll?
Dolls are, that's girl stuff.
Yeah. Did you, but would you have been called? I mean, it's such a cliche that gets thrown around, less now, but certainly when we were younger,
tomboy.
Yeah. Did you qualify?
I wasn't a tomboy, but.
Because some people think it's one or the other. It's like, you know what I mean? Now
girly.
We know that's just not how. gender works, but
yeah. Like, I mean,
particularly if you're around the outdoors and you like living animate horse, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't have access to something like a horse.
I wasn't a tomboy, but I was a girl who, like, all of my friends were guys. And so when I, you know, I hated things that were like overtly feminine. So like Barbies and dolls. And when we would go to McDonald's, I would ask for the boy happy meal rather than the girl happy meal because I wanted a car over a doll. So stuff like that. But no, I don't think I was explicitly a tomboy. I think it did take me like a journey through my life, though, to embrace like super feminine stuff, and now I'm like super femme.
Well, it's interesting if it's especially if there's a part of you that intellectualizes that stuff early, even if it's, I don't know how you can unconsciously intellectualize stuff, but I feel like that's possible as a young person.
Like, yeah, I mean, this was the way sort of like I saw sort of like gender socialized in my own life was, you know, as a kid. Yeah, I didn't want.
Do you have brothers and sisters? By the
way? I have one sister. Oh. Yeah,
where is she? Younger. Does she? Was she similar or was she sort of more
no, she and I are pretty different.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like, so, you know, I grew up and you know, having guys as friends. And then so like I never wanted to associate with super feminine stuff. And that was very much part of my identity. But you can see that sort of grow in someone, you know, and this is sort of like what patriarchy is, which is like to be cool amongst boys. Don't be overly feminine because then they're going to be like, you know, what's wrong with you?
And yeah, so it's like a different kind of, I mean, it's sort of the so like as a female chauvinist kind of thing where it's like you.
Oh, it's terrible. Yeah. Because like as a teenager, then, you know, this manifested in me thinking that I used to be, not anymore, but I used to be one of those girls who thought that, oh, I couldn't possibly be friends with women. You know, they're so annoying and like, oh, they're like, you know, perky and that's not me. And so thus, you know, I can't be friends with women or I'm very rarely friends with women. So it's like I had a couple friends over my teens that were women. But for the most part, it was guys. And it's not until, yeah, I became really an adult and then moved especially to San Francisco and actually met like, you know, ton of awesome women who are like me, who don't have to be, you know, perky, or maybe some of them are, it doesn't matter, like, but it took me time to unwind all of that patriarchy social gender stuff of sort of like, yeah. And so it breaks my heart a lot of times when I see women say, oh god, I'm not really friends with women, or I can't be friends with women, because I can identify from where that comes from and that feeling. Yeah. But also, you know, I you know, everyone has to move at their own pace and their own time. And so I'm now on the side of like the majority of my friends are women. They freaking kick ass.
Yeah.
And I've never been like prouder and happier. And now it's not really a factor, but it takes time.
Did you have, I feel very similar. I would have a couple of close girlfriends. And then when I was in high school, I definitely got into, and I've talked about this before, but like I definitely had more girlfriends who were friends with each other and that I would want to spend time with, you know, en masse. But I'm an only child and I was a very one-on-one kid. Like I play with this friend or this other friend who doesn't know that friend. Mm. And it wasn't intentional, but I think I was sort of, again, like socially schooled accidentally from some sort of system of reward and attention that like, it's like one-on-one is really important. And so there would be like group settings, like birthday parties or whatever, but that wasn't as meaningful to me as like this intense sort of like weird relationshipy level friendships with certain people. But a lot of that for me, particularly as I went into, you know, junior high and high school, was with guys as well. But I think I also had, you know, those experiences very young where I was bullied by girls, principally, if only by girls. I'm trying to think of any time I was bullied by a guy, like legitimately bullied by a guy. Maybe once in junior high, there was one guy. Yeah. Scott.
I was bullied by both genders.
But also I did have those sort of heartbreaking, like all of a sudden, this girl just won't talk to me for a month and I don't know why. That happened to me a couple of times.
Me too.
I still somehow feel like I still kind of feel responsible, but I'm like, I don't think I did anything. I think it was just this weird dynamic that happens sometimes. And if it hadn't happened to me, maybe I would have been the one who did it. But I think I was that, and like my weird relationship with my mom when my parents got divorced, I was like afraid of girls. And so I was less, annoyed by them, more I was just like very distrustful and protective, and sort of it took me a while to get close, except for these couple of girls I knew growing up. And so I think the same thing for me, like I really, it took a while to establish this idea of, God, women are great. And wow, I'm lucky to know so many amazing women. And that's the podcast just enforces that over and over for me. But it was, so for me, it was more, it was less like, oh, I identify more with these guys and I don't want them to see me as different, and more just like, maybe I'm safer with guys, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's like, I definitely had many experiences like that where, out of nowhere, some girl would like, like stop talking to me, or I got kicked off a volleyball team without being told. I was told by a girl that the volleyball team was disbanding, and literally a year later I found out that someone was playing volleyball who was on my team. I was like, oh, so they're starting up the team again? She's like, what are you talking about? I was literally lied to instead of like actually kicked off of it.
So weird, you know? Bad.
Yeah. And then in like grade school, I remember there was a girl, I was like in the girls' restroom, and like some girl just came up to me literally out of nowhere, punched me in the stomach. I didn't even see it coming. And then I was like, what was that? Like afterwards I was like, what did I do? Like, where did that come? And she just said, oh, I was really pissed off at my friend, so I needed to punch something. It was me.
Oh,
like,
that's so
she punched
pathetic.
Me like because she was mad at her friend. I was like,
young people don't know what to do with their feelings or energy. That has been established and recorded time and again. But that doesn't make it any
easier.
The problems
of being a wallflower is people mistake you for being a wall.
Exactly. I guess so. Is that, were you shy too? Did you
Oh, I was super shy.
Yeah.
You know, shy, nerdy, you know.
Were you a great student?
Very good student. So I was, you
and
know,
because
I was
the liked kid it, no not one wanted. Because,
yeah.
Not because you were like, I have this particular goal. Was it like you just enjoyed learning? And
well, I don't know. It's weird. So I was always like really good student, straight A or near straight A. And I don't know, but I can't say that like I loved school. Like, and I know that it sounds weird to say even now, but it's like I just have like kind of a good student complex, and it wasn't my parents. No one instilled this in me. I'm terrified of like doing something wrong, and like I have I'm very neurotic about it. Like I still have this problem today where it's like I'll be doing something that's completely meaningless, but if I don't do it, you know, to perfection, you know, the whole world's going to end.
Yeah.
Like I never shook that off. But so growing up, like I was a very good student, and in grade school, you know, I think a lot of kids thought I was, you know, weird, and so didn't really want to be friends with me. So I was the typical kid that, you know, they'd cheat off of, but they didn't really want to be friends with.
Yeah.
But I was pretty, you know, ignorant to all of that was going around me until I kind of hit middle school, teenage age, and then I sort of realized like what was going on. And
what was your high school like? Was it a sort of a traditional, like how one thinks of the great American high school, or was it a smaller school?
Yeah, I think it's a fairly normal high school. It was a good school district. We had 2,100 kids in our high school. Nothing too remarkable about it, other than, you know, the weird thing about growing up in Kansas is that, you know, Kansas makes headlines every couple of years or so for like the Board of Education or something saying, oh, we're only going to be teaching creationism and no evolution. And and it's so terrible because, you know, you grew up in Kansas. And so it sort of people have a certain idea of what you grew up with. But again, in this sort of like little oasis of Kansas City, it's a lot more liberal, and it's not people growing up on farms in the middle of nowhere and thinking creationism. So, but it manifests in weird ways of, you know, I remember going to sort of like a back to school night or something, and the teachers had written on all the chalkboards, like, we teach evolution, just as sort of like a statement of like we're not listening
to. Let's get this out of the way. This is a different world than the world you might think it
is. So it was weird in that, you know, there's probably not that many schools that have to actually write that.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
the
that
board,
would not be something,
you know,
that would even come
but it was
play
sort of
me,
you know, it had been in the headlines, and so the teachers just wanted to be like, hey parents, just so you know, we're not listening to those, you know, wackadoodle headlines.
So
I guess that's sort of what I grew up, you know, I wasn't really exposed to all of the you know, typical things that you think of when you think of Kansas, but we grew up sort of like in opposition to that.
Sure, sure. Yeah, I know. It creates a need to have a stand on something that would normally just be something that's like, this is just day-to-day life. Yeah, it's not a big deal. Yeah. What were your hobbies by the time you were in high school? What was the stuff that you really loved to do?
So in high school, I became like a really big rave kid. Like, that was sort of like my rebellion and release and, you know, finding my people. So I was like a huge candy kid. And but even in like going to raves, I was still like probably the weird nerd because I never did drugs.
Well, that was my next question. You know, that's the next obvious question.
Well, it's like, so I was surrounded by tons of people doing tons of drugs. I was having a great time. I probably looked like I was on drugs because I had like, you know, candy bracelets and a visor and like I had the whole raver look. To this day, I've never done any drugs at all. And
I definitely have friends like that.
I have only met like one, sort of the same, maybe one other person who has like a similar story. But
yeah.
But yeah, so like going to raves was like my thing and my way of like getting out of, you know, not being popular in high school. And so, but like I had this whole other community on the weekends. And yeah, it was definitely my first time in finding true community. And it made such a huge impact on my life. And it was the happiest I had been as a teenager, for sure.
God, it's so interesting. Yeah, I mean, the only thing, just to circle back on the drug thing with raves specifically, because I'm thinking about, for example, my friend April Richardson, who is well known on the podcast, who also has never done any drugs, but was way more of a, you know, I'm going to follow the Smiths and Morrissey to all their shows, and so it's also very drug use adjacent, and she is also one of those people that it wasn't like she took this like strong stand and was like yelling at everybody else not to. She just was really like, weird. Don't need to, don't want to. Yeah. And but that to me just and I'm, by the way, coming from the perspective, as these guys know, of a person who did take a lot of drugs when I was in high school and was not into raves, but like that would have been the next, like raves weren't really, I'm older than you, I think, so raves weren't really, that's not what it was. It was just like we all, you know, you go to an all ages club and you drop acid and you dance to The Cure or whatever, which sort of gave way to raves. But what I was going to say is that like being into Morrissey and not taking drugs is easier for me to imagine than raves. And that's probably what people say is like, how did that stay interesting to you? Like part of the music and the sort of culture is like, one could say enhanced significantly and staying up all night. Or whatever
is for me, it was because I got, when I was 12, I got really into electronic music and I didn't know a single soul who was into electronic music. Yeah. So it's like, I was obsessed with it. It was great. I was like saving up to get turntables. Had never heard of raves, though. Had never heard of any of this. And, you know...
Do you remember how you came across electronic music then? Did you have a friend?
I think it was the internet. You know, it's like you had these browsable, you know, radio stations, you know, Real Player, whatever it was. Like, you know, and I'd be browsing stuff. But I think that was part of it. But I think ultimately the thing was that... there was like a really popular Fatboy Slim song and I was like on the radio and I was like, oh, I'm going to get that CD. And I got the CD and it was the wrong Fatboy Slim CD. And I didn't know that. It was like an earlier one. Maybe it was Better Living Through. I can't. I think it was that one. And like I turned on the first track and it was like the first time I had ever heard electronic music. And I was just instantly in love. I was like, what is this? This is amazing. Yeah. And so I think that was like the first thing. And then after that, I went to the internet. I was like, I have to find more of this stuff. And so,
that feeling of
discovery.
I mean, it really is like you're falling in love. Like your brain's chemistry, I'm sure, is having this significant response where like your heart rate increases and you're like dopamine and you're sort of going, I need this is to finally feel this way about this very, you know, whatever these various things are that we kind of come across in our lives. Those are so significant.
No, it was great. And then, like, I remember I found Underworld, which to this day is, like, one of my favorite music artists. And I remember, I think this was also when I was 12. I went into, like, a used CD store looking for, like, an Underworld album. And I remember the clerk was like, you know about Underworld? Like, this 12-year-old's coming in, you know, looking for, like, this British, you know, artist CD that's kind of obscure.
Yeah. I do kind of, I have to say I miss that. I do miss that feeling of like, again, because of that heart rate increase thing. I miss like going to, you know, a CD store and going to whatever band I really like. And if it's a place that, you know, specializes in imports or whatever, like that moment of like looking for the flap that has that band's name on it and flipping it and just hoping like, I don't like, just, I mean, it really is like a candy store feeling. Like I can only see the tops of the CDs. So I can't see, all I see is the plastic.
Yeah.
It could be anything, could be all stuff I already have, but what if it's not? And then flipping forward and seeing something that's like, oh my God, this is a total bootleg recorded from a live show. Like I do miss that.
Yeah.
No, because the internet, I don't
and
have
that was
you know?
Like that was where I mean randomly community sports. So it's like, you know, fast forward to I don't know, I was 14 or 15 years old and some friends were going to some rave and I didn't know what it was and I went and then, you know, there's 400 500 people in a room dancing to electronic music, this music that I thought no one else liked, and then instantly there's like 500 people and I'm like, oh my God, my people. There's, I was like, there's other people who like this music. It was amazing.
Yeah.
But then, you know, going back to the CD flipping thing, you know, I remember Borders, and Borders was like, Borders had CDs. And like, I remember once I started getting into raves, I'd be going to Borders and like flipping through either CDs. And they also sometimes had vinyl. And like, someone worked there and recognized that like I went to raves and you know, and then like then I had a new buddy to go to raves with, and it was around having to go to a physical store to something, and then you might actually connect with people who are part of your same community. And you know, and so I guess you know, nowadays we do that with Twitter in a sense.
Obviously there's still, I'm sure for those of you who are younger listeners who are like, please stop talking about the virtues of CD stores. I mean, obviously there are a ton of ways to connect with people, but that certainly was, that was like a very specific experience that I can relate to. And also, it's interesting when you are in a community or you're in a world where other people seem to have that just by virtue of where they are. It's like, you're you know, it could be like, these people go to church, that's their community. These people are hugely into sports. We, no problem. There's plenty of people who feel that way. And then to not even know that you're searching for it in a sense. And then to find that outside of whatever, you know, the quote unquote norm of what you're used to seeing, is that can be a really profound feeling, you know? Did you feel that way going into, I mean, I'm jumping way ahead, but with the whole NASA adventure, was there a similar feeling there of sort of like, oh my God, all these other people who didn't necessarily study this? And I'll ask you to just back up and explain what I'm talking about. Since we did Star Talk together, guys, if you're wondering why I know this, but if there was a sense of that too, of the sort of like, oh, look at this stitched together group that, you know, weren't coming together in school and studying this subject and finding, you know?
Yeah. I mean, so to give a little background, I guess, the story. When I was a teenager, I was really obsessed with design and like really obsessed. No one could have knocked me off that path. And science, like I wasn't really, I couldn't say I was a science geek. Like I didn't hate it. Like
design, just because I know your dad's a furniture designer. Yeah. Product design, graphic interior design, graphic design.
Yeah.
Great.
So like I was like, okay, I'm going to become a graphic designer with the ultimate goal of becoming an executive creative director. That's what I told myself at 14. I was like obsessed. And this plays into the whole good student thing of like, I have a very specific idea of what I need to achieve.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. I was very direction.
I just think that's
like,
so rare.
It was rare, and I wouldn't really wish it on anyone else. You know, occasionally, like my sister has been like, well, you know, maybe I should have been. I was like, no, you should not be like me, because I was a really weird kid and it had a lot of weird social implications to like know exactly what you want at 14 and like that's all you're going to do. So yeah, I didn't like hate science. I just wasn't really into it. You know, it just didn't really speak to me. And I was very one-minded about, becoming eventually an executive creative director as my goal.
And what does that mean?
So,
like,
if you work at, like, an ad agency or some creative agency or something, you know, you're the ultimate creative director. You know, you're the top of the heap. You get to have your hands in art direction and, you know, all the creative-related things. You get to run a creative department. You know, how cool is that? Like, having a bunch of creative people and being able to sort of direct them and help. So
it's hard for me to imagine you working for an ad firm now.
Yeah. So right? So actually I interned and then, I spent actually, gosh, like 8.5 years working at an ad agency in Kansas City, called VML, and they're amazing and really cool. To me, it was like working at Pixar or something.
Yeah, you know, sure.
It's a really creative place. Sure. Like you're not making, you know, banner ads. Like you're actually producing like really like high end, like creative sort of pieces of art in mm-hmm. a sense. But anyway, so I went to art school, and got my degree in graphic design, and I, then moved to San Francisco, and I was still sort of figuring out what I was doing.
A pretty good city to move to, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's not like you were drawn to a city that didn't also have good opportunities for this stuff. You're not, it's yeah. not New York.
Yeah, but I had considered New York and London, which would have been much better moves if I had wanted to stay in the same industry. But, you know, I was sort of like trying, you know, I was, you know, just, you know, getting out of college, trying to figure out like what I'm doing. I met some people, moved to San Francisco, which is a whole nother story. But I, you know, I was watching a documentary on the Discovery Channel called When We Left Earth. And it was this documentary about NASA trying to figure out how to send people into space and how to send put someone on the moon. And, you know, I knew this stuff, but I don't know if I had properly sat down to like watch sort of the history of it. And it was this great documentary. And but one part of it really stuck out to me. And it was the part where they were interviewing people from Mission Control. And one of the guys from Mission Control, you know, years later talking about, you know, the early 60s, was talking about how when they were working at NASA that they didn't know anything about orbits or rocketry or, you know, spacecrafts, and they were having to learn it as they went along. And I don't know, for me, it just turned on a light bulb. I was like, well, I don't know anything about space. I want to work at NASA. That sounds amazing. And I told that to a friend, and that friend had just met someone at NASA randomly at an event. And I was like, oh, do you have their email address? And he's like, yeah. And so I emailed this random person that I had never met, you know, just saying, hey, I'm a huge fan of NASA. Like all of a sudden, like I was a huge fan of NASA as of like a week, uh-huh. like, you know, like, and
I do know, I get
yeah,
it.
Yeah. And I was like, you know, if you ever need someone like me, someone completely without any science background, let me know. And the day I emailed them, they had just created a job description, just posted this job, looking for someone who explicitly didn't work at NASA, who had kind of no experience with NASA, to help them sort of bridge the gap between communities inside and outside of NASA to collaborate. And so I applied for the job, and very unexpectedly got the job, and I ended up working at NASA. Which,
now, Ariel, yeah. Listen, this is the problem I have with this. It's not a real problem, I promise. Here's the problem. I am a, what do you want to call it? Like a magical realist? I don't know. I don't get angry at the idea of people going like, oh, it was meant to be, or it's fate. I don't think that there's a God, like there's yeah. a guy who's like flipping through his, yeah. you know, files, and he's like, okay, on this yeah. day, XYZ will happen. But I also, listen, if this gets us into a huge argument, I'm prepared for it, and I respect everything you say, so you're in good shape. But
yeah, yeah.
But and you will come out sounding smarter and better than me.
Oh.
But than I. Ah. Mm. But I also sometimes, like, I have friends who are very impatient with the, and again, like, colored water auras, that's not really my bag.
Yep.
But I also have friends who get angry with me who aren't like, you're not helping, Janet. You need to be a staunch atheist. You need to be a secular right. humanist. You need to tell me there's no magic in the world. And you need to help me disseminate that information, because that it's too close to the idea of God, the Father, and the Holy mm-hmm. Ghost to say that there are unknowns out there. So when you tell a story like that, you must know, and I'm sure this has come up before, that people are like, I mean, is that stochasticity? Is it, you know, what is that? That you have all these wonderful coincidences. Again, I'm not saying that it's like, I think you just proved there's God. I'm not saying that at all. But those sorts of things, it's wonderful that happenstance and mm-hmm. randomness, even if that's your magic.
Yeah.
Isn't it wonderful to feel that sense of like, whoa?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, it is, but I think a lot of it comes from, you know, hindsight, because again, I didn't grow up, you know, worshiping NASA or being a big science geek. I would never have identified as a science geek. But if someone had randomly at any point in my life been like, hey, you want a job at NASA? I've been like, hell yeah. Like, you know, okay. Like who wouldn't?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And
right.
So that's the sort of, the, you know, and I think that's really why it stuck with me, is because it was such a profound realization of like, I seriously just got a job at NASA. Like, are you kidding me? You know, and
what
then
was
I was
the process
like,
what was the interview and sort of the process?
I went in for a couple of interviews and it and, just, and they just liked me. I don't know.
But what was how much of you and your experience did you guys delve into in terms
So that job description, it was a little bit eerie in that it read like my resume at the time. They wanted someone with a background in design. They wanted someone with a background in advertising.
Makes sense.
And they wanted someone who was connected to the startup scene in San Francisco, which I was just beginning to be. You know, I was working at a startup and I was pretty, you know, most of my friends are, you know, tech. And so that's kind of my social group. And where I operate.
Yeah, because if I had the same experience and I had told a friend who, like, if I, you know, for example, I have like 10 people who are all very good friends with Bobak, who I now know just through them. If that had been me and I had been like, I just saw this documentary, working as a actor, producer of a comedy / journalist, I would love to, I don't think that would have been the same experience for me. They would have been
hire video hosts to do like cool videos and stuff. Like, what's her name? Amy Shura Tytel. She's a space historian, but she's on YouTube. And then
I'm sure Kara Santa Maria has done stuff.
Yeah, Amy got booked to do like these videos explaining Pluto leading up to the New Horizons flyby at Pluto and everything.
I do need to send an email.
You know,
through you, my friend Ariel.
I just say, you know, but this was the whole thing. Is like, so I don't know. I obviously don't believe in divine intervention or think that this was made to be, because I didn't even know that this was really going. I didn't know
that
it was going to have the effect.
They would say in favor of it being divine intervention.
Sure. And they can say that. But, you know, but this is my career since getting this job at NASA has been just really based on that first realization and experience, and wanting to give that to other people, and realizing, you can get a job at NASA, or you can like actually contribute to space exploration in a really unique way, even without having a job at NASA. And so I kind of dedicated my life towards giving other people that experience that I had, closely similar experiences, because it was all around the realization of like, oh, I could contribute to, you know, space exploration and scientific discovery, but I can still have the career that I had, you know, originally wanted. You know, nowadays, of course, my career is like definitely on the space side, but I think one of the things that the scientific industry sort of suffers from, that they're not always aware of, is that sometimes I feel like they're a little disrespectful towards people's career decisions. So there's a lot of emphasis about getting, you know, kids and women into science, and there should be. And, you know, definitely there are plenty of people out in the world who want to do science who don't have enough access or enough encouragement. So it's nothing against that. But that said, the science industry a lot of times says, you could have gone into science, but you went into fashion.
Right.
You know, if you're a fashion designer and you want to do work at NASA, you know, drop everything you're doing, get a PhD in science, you know, call it a day. It's not respecting that people have other interests in science and that interests are just as valuable and awesome as working in science. I think science a lot of times is pushed as this sort of like higher ideal than other industry choices, than other career choices. And I really, really push back against that because I think it's awful. So because I came from art school, graphic design, you know, there's no part of me saying, oh, I wish I had, you know, pursued astrophysics or something.
Sure.
You know, I know why I pursued what I did. But the reality is that I have, you know, I, as I exist right now, have things to contribute to the science industry. And so do a lot of other people. And so that's sort of what led to everything that I do now. It's all in this mission of getting people from all different backgrounds to contribute to science and telling them that they don't need to drop everything and get a PhD unless that's what they want,
right?
But that they can actually use the skills and perspectives that they already have, that they themselves, as they exist now, are perfect to contribute to science. And they can do it, you know, a little bit or a lot or however they feel about it. They can drop in and out of it. It's not a binary decision.
I think that is absolutely fantastic. And honestly, other than through what you do and what I've learned through that avenue, that isn't something I ever thought about. You know, you're right. That sort of, that's this kind of an unspoken, whether it's projected elitism or it's real or a little of both,
mm-hmm.
there really is that sense yeah. of us and them, like, yeah. oh, these are the minds, these are the great minds,
mm-hmm.
and who am I, and what say do I have, or why, you know, and that, I think you're, I mean, obviously, I'm sure this is stuff you talked about many times, but just that idea mm-hmm. of, like, a growing gap between a civilization that ostensibly should be looking collectively together at that next thing and that exploration
yeah.
versus, well, that's not on me, I'm just here working my blue-collar job.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything to do with that stuff. And frankly, why would I want money to go towards that when
mm-hmm.
I need to feed my kids? And
mm-hmm.
what kind of participation can people have in a way that, you know, creates that sense of like, this belongs to all of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
No, absolutely. And so, you know, when I got the job at NASA, I was only there for a short time. And then when I left, I spent some time and built out spacehack.org, which is yeah a directory of ways for anyone to participate in space exploration. And it was specifically because of that. And, you know, on spacehack.org, you've got projects that, you know, only require a little bit of time, some require a lot of time. But, you know, you've got all of these things. And I created it because when I was working at NASA, I had heard about all of these projects that people could contribute to. But, you know, only government people knew about them
mm-hmm.
or when I went to the websites, you know, even if it was a very simple thing to get involved in, they made it so difficult to understand.
Yeah.
So with space hockey, you know, I sort of manually transcribe these things to make them a lot more accessible and then also promote them to groups that are not already tuned into NASA. And I think that's one of the challenges that NASA still has today is, you know, they've grown their fan base, but when they, you know, talk about getting involved, a lot of times they have trouble reaching out to people who aren't already listening to NASA and tuned into that. And
yeah.
so I think the important thing is, I again, I sort of just thinking back to myself and my own experience, is that there would have been nothing on my profile, nothing to identify me as a science geek, as
sure,
someone that
sure.
NASA should have reached out
Great
to.
Great point, yeah.
You know, and I think that's the thing that's important is, you know, there's a lot of people, again, most people you go up to on the street, hey, do you want a job at NASA? Would probably say yes.
Yeah.
Probably, I'm guessing. But, you know, would we be able to find them anywhere?
The only reason they would say no that pops into my mind immediately, other than like inferiority complex of like, why would I do, is that they just know there's a lot of, they would assume like, I can't do all that math.
Yeah, well, but that's the whole point is like, if someone said, do you want a job at NASA? I'll give it to you no matter
yeah.
what you do or don't know,
yeah.
no matter how, you know, you feel about yourself,
yeah.
they would say yes.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And, yeah.
It's super cool.
No, I know a lot of people would talk themselves out of it. I mean, I'd talk myself out of it. But, you know, but again, like going back to that sort of divine whatnot, you know, this is one story that like worked out this way. Like if you were to go to like all the random emails I've sent to people who never, ever responded.
Sure.
It'd be a time.
Sure, sure.
You know, this isn't, yeah, like, I'm sure at some point I've emailed Pixar. I'm sure, you know,
yeah.
I've emailed a lot of other random, you know, things. And
that is where that sort of, you know, hunger that you wouldn't wish on anybody, that then at least there's, you know, the part that pays off of that sort of doggedness is something that I wish I had more of that. I wish I had more of the sort of, like, I'm going to, you know what? I'm sending another email today another 50 emails today.
Yeah, I mean, some of it's hunger when you know what you want to do, but some of it's just like curiosity and like, who knows, sort of thing. And
I think that's great too, though. What a great thing to encourage
like, you know,
people.
Why not email?
You're not going to get, don't assume you're going to get hurt by no response, a response.
Yeah,
you know,
especially when you have no investment in it. So this story could have gone, I could have emailed NASA. They could have not responded. I could have then just not done anything else about it and gone a different direction. Like that could have very easily happened. And it did happen, probably 50, 100 times over of like random people I've emailed hoping for something. You know, I've emailed, you know, people in the, you know, movie industry wanting to be now like a scientific advisor. And like, they're like, yeah, we're not answering your email, you know, like, so there's a lot of things like that. So
But it's nice when we have those ones or twos, because that's a lot of what show business is too, right? Is this idea of just building up this, you know, resume of rejection for those opportunities when things do happen. And it does feel like this kind of black swan opportunity. I'm not speaking of the movie guys. If you're interested in what a black swan is, that's a whole other, you should listen to a smart person. Now I'm doing it. I'm smart enough to know what it is. It doesn't mean you're not smart if you don't know what it is. Just look it up. It's cool. It's a cool thing. It's a cool thing to talk about. But you know, this idea of like getting that feedback of, again, kind of like gambling. I'm not a gambler because my assumption is nothing will ever come through. That money is better spent elsewhere. But I can understand the sort of like adrenaline and dopamine response because I know what it feels like to take chances in my work and have something pay off and have most things not pay off and feel that feeling of like, well, it happened once.
Yeah.
And if it can happen once, it can happen again.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And you know, equally, my hope is that also, you know, organizations and you know, government agencies sort of learn from this because, you know, since this experience, I've become, you know, a huge, I guess, proponent and I don't know what to say, a person, I guess, in the space industry. But, you know, equally, I hope places like NASA and other organizations sort of learn the importance of also taking a chance on people who, don't have any experience, sort of to then become your largest fans. And actually, you can grow, you know, communities that way because you can tap into people who are sort of key influencers in other communities who maybe have no experience with your own, but giving them a chance to actually be embedded and come in, you know, long term can mean that, you know, you're actually actually making science or whatever it is more accessible.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, isn't the, I mean, I have to, I'm never been more sure of anything that I don't know the answer to, but I would imagine that it becomes very addictive in a very positive way to get the feedback from the people whose lives you've impacted who say, thank you so much for making this available to me. Thank you so much for making me feel like I deserve to be in this room in a way that I never would have felt on my own. I mean, that's just, that's an amazing gasoline. You know what I mean? It's because those little moments that I have are, they feel real different than just getting a check in the mail. They feel real different. Yeah. I need both, but I do need more than, you know what I mean? It's quite a feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's the reason why any introverts like myself might, you know, do a lot of public facing things is, even though it's, you know, difficult, the impact it makes on people is worth it. It's worth sort of powering through your introversion.
Absolutely.
There's
so much more I want to say about this, but I also feel like, I can refer people to your all of the material that's out there that's generated by you. Certainly the Star Talk episode that we did together, I know there was a lot more covered about space hack and things that people can do to get involved. And what you were saying about this idea of, I mean, I really walked away super inspired after that experience, specifically because of this idea of like you, for me, it's very much like comedy and being in a room with comedians or doing improv, which is, if you're in a safe space, if you have an idea that you're not sure is any good at all, but you have the courage to put it out there, somebody, and you have to be also have the ego to like be happy for someone to make it better. Do you know what I mean? We can't as human beings feel that the origin of the best idea in the world needs to come from us. It has to be collective. It has to be like, this, you guys, this might be really stupid, or maybe you don't even say that, but if you need to qualify, great, yeah. and put it out there. And then someone else goes, maybe not that, but, mm-hmm. and then the best thing ever comes from that. And yeah. that's where, you know, we end up with a means to get to Io or Europa right, or whatever. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Great. Thank God you opened your mouth in that room of people that you, where you thought, wow, what would I know about getting to, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's absolutely. Just like, it gives me chills. I really walked away from that going, okay, so that's just like, that's the hive mind that I love so much about any kind of project, where it's okay to say something or posit something, knowing that, like, it might be absolutely nothing, but even you, but your nothing might be someone else's, like, light bulb moment,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah,
it's absolutely. Great. I play this MASH game at the end of every episode.
Okay.
MASH, I don't know if you ever played it.
No.
You were pretty busy becoming a executive creative director.
A nerd, yeah.
This is a game that has been around for many, many, many years. MASH stands for mansion, apartment, shack, or house.
Okay.
I will give you, I like to tailor this. In the old days, it would be like, what kind? Name three cars you would drive. Name three guys you would marry.
Okay,
name gosh. This and that. This is this is our little... wrap up so that I get three of each thing from you, and these are categories that will make sense to you in a second.
Okay.
And then we do the sort of like eeny, meeny, miny, mo, after which you receive your MASH future.
Oh my God.
Alternate
I'm
universe
scared.
MASH future.
I'm scared.
So the first one, I'll take it easy on you for the first one. The first one is would be like MASH, mansion, apartment, shack, house means that that will be decided for you
mm-hmm.
by a defined intervention
mm-hmm.
Via probably hash marks. But, the second one is you're going to have this mansion, apartment, shack, or house in a vacation place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to take it outside of planet Earth as we know it in terms of what's reasonable for a vacation home and say, mm-hmm. in this case, it should be something that for some reason isn't really physically viable, whether it's an imaginary realm like Middle mm-hmm. Earth, whether mm-hmm. it's, you know, mm-hmm. another planet, whether it's the bottom of the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
Three places that it would be amazing to just sort of snap your fingers and be able to like kick back and enjoy this alternate universe world.
Oh gosh, I have to think about that one.
And by the way, all of these will be like that, and you'll be like, yeah. "Can I get back to you?" And they'll say, "No, you have to improvise
yeah,
the answers
to.
Really
you
fast."
I mean,
I apologize.
Oh god. Well, I mean, the first thing that comes to mind, but I don't know if I would enjoy it though, is you know, one of my favorite places in the solar system is Enceladus.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, perfectly white. Icy, you know, moon, but I don't like being cold. This is
well, this, but in this world, all the bad stuff.
Okay, let's just say,
window, so
like,
we'll say
I have like
Enceladus.
The best heater
great.
On Enceladus.
Enceladus,
then yeah, that's, yeah, copy, that's, copy,
that's,
copy. Let's do that. Yeah.
Now I need two more.
World
yeah.
sort of places.
And again, it could be a made up place too.
Yeah,
if you like
made
the
up
place.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Dagobah or something.
Oh my God. I have to think.
Was there like a book or like a movie that you like sort of
yeah,
swallowed
going through
up by
sort
when
of
you
like
were younger?
Sci-fi and yeah. trying to think. Oh my God. Okay, I mean one that's cool to me. God, now I have to remember. Oh, a movie that came out like past few years, Oblivion.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of sci-fi world, but it's like you get to see, you know, the bridges buried. It's like Earth 2070
oh, yeah.
or 2077
yes, yes.
or something.
Yes.
And it's like you just get to see sort of like this desolate, but also, you know, you see remnants of Earth. It's not entirely destroyed.
Love anything yeah. like that, I'm such a sucker for. I know a lot of people
yeah.
are. That's why they keep getting made. But things like 12 Monkeys where... Mm. the animals have taken over New York City
mm-hmm.
and you sort of see things from the what if we weren't here anymore kind of thing is
yeah.
fascinating. People are really fascinated by the sort of future anthropology of the present.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really interesting. I love that. Okay. And then one more.
Okay. Then I guess I'll just be easy and say like aboard like Star Trek.
Great.
Like, yeah, that'd be.
That's good because you get
Enterprise.
The holodeck too. So
yeah.
you can go wherever you
yeah,
want.
Yeah. I'm like, how cool would it be to have one of those little rooms and, you know, your little 3D printer of sorts on board and
exactly
all
right.
that. So that'd work. Yeah.
Okay. Great. Great. Let's do, so in this life you have, started this great organization. This can be as frivolous or as profound as you want. This is I will say you've done enough already. So no answer could possibly be wrong.
Okay.
But this is like alternate universe, other career or business. Like, oh, I actually would, you know what, if I could own like a cafe with books, then
mm-hmm.
that would be, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. So alternate careers.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would actually love to be a fashion designer. Like, great. I really love fashion.
Agreed.
And I really love, like, if I could do, like, biomimicry fashion, that I'd love that.
Tell us what biomimicry.
Oh, biomimicry. Like, things that mimic animals or plants, yeah, or, you know, other things, natural things.
Yeah.
So, you know, being able to make a dress that looks like a jellyfish. I don't know.
I love that.
Something like that.
Yeah. I love that. That's great. Okay. Fashion designer. I need two more.
Oh God. Now I have to.
I know.
What else would I do? I would be, saving rainforests for lemurs in Madagascar.
Wonderful.
I really respect some awesome people who do that.
No doubt.
And Madagascar is amazing. And then, gosh, I'm trying to think of like something that's like inaccessible that I would want to do. Let's say, you know, marine biologist.
Great.
Because I love like deep sea stuff. And
agreed.
You know, I would equally like to email a marine biologist and be like, hey, I'm a big fan, but I have like no experience.
Yeah. Like, tell me what I can do. Here's what I was able to do before, yeah, when this is the case.
Can I come look at like vampire squids with you or something? You
know? No kidding, right?
Yeah.
That vampire squid.
Is it, or again, vampire octopus? One of the two.
I think it's a squid.
Yeah. It's one of those.
Give that a Google, guys. It is
creepy as
stunning.
Hell.
I just creepy took a picture of one, I guess, was at the Natural History Museum. Not a mm-hmm. live one, but like an image of one, yep, at the Natural History
this
Museum in New York.
Like,
I was
so creepy.
Blown away. Okay, great. This is a favorite of mine. I question your feelings. We'll find out. But this is a food or substance, a drink, something that in this reality is not good for you, Ariel, mm-hmm, on some level. For me, I have some allergies, so this is where I take mm-hmm. my time to really you know, enjoy that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you know, either it makes you fat, or it makes mm-hmm. you have a heart attack, mm-hmm, or it makes, or it's an animal and you don't want to eat animals, mm-hmm, or it's, you know, booze or whatever
stuff you enjoy that's
things,
not good.
Yeah, three things here where in this world they actually benefit your health in some way.
Oh, well, I
and
mean,
you can have the snap
this is
of your
pretty
finger.
Much everything I already eat. It's like
wonderful.
Chocolate, cheese.
Great.
What is the third?
Cheese.
Mm. I mean, I have a huge sweet tooth, so really it's just anything sugar.
Yeah. If you're really hungry and you could have anything that you'd had anywhere, mm-hmm, what would be the sort of thing you would go like, oh God, I wish I could just dive into this one cupcake that I had one time and blah, blah, blah.
Oh God. I'd have to think about that. Because I really love food.
Yeah.
I really love it.
And
there's not many things I wouldn't say, oh yeah, I'd just dive into a whole bunch.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's like mac and cheese.
Oh,
like
the best.
I'm in love, you
the
know.
Best.
Yeah.
Pasta in general,
pasta.
Italian food,
God,
pizza, just the way that the Italians specifically figured out cheese mm-hmm. and bread together in all their many forms.
Mm-hmm.
Mwah.
I feel like this isn't very fantasy because like chocolate cheese, mac and cheese, like I eat that stuff.
Listen, I'm all for it. I think if you allow yourself and can enjoy that stuff and also
in moderation.
Yeah, that's the key. I have trouble moderating any of those things that you just named, but I just love them so much. Okay, next one is, now this is alternate universe, doesn't have to be a real person, could be mostly because it's a sexual attraction thing, mm-hmm, it could be because it's like, this is my alternate universe companion, mm-hmm, three people, and I don't care if they're from fiction, it could be mm-hmm. like Jodie Foster's character in Contact, it could
yeah.
be, you know, three people that it would be fun to have like sexy times or like heartful times with, huh, in this alternate universe.
Oh gosh, again, I have to think about this. I know I have a crush on Daniel Craig.
What a doll.
Yeah,
he was one that I didn't see it. He was somebody that like I would see before I had really seen him in anything. I would mm-hmm. hear other, like when he started to trickle in as mm-hmm. like an it boy there,
yeah,
before, like when they were like, he's gonna be the new Bond, and I hadn't seen him in anything. Mm-hmm. Just seeing him, I was like, I don't know, like mm-hmm. and then when I started seeing
yeah,
him in
like,
acting, I
yeah.
thought there he's really got
yeah.
something.
And then,
I mean, he's
like,
very sexy and handsome, but I don't you, but like you just
he's
don't
sexy
know
and
until...
handsome, and then it, yeah, and then he's great as an actor, but I think the thing that I like especially is when he's, you know, just himself, he's actually quite shy, and I'm like, oh, that's like actually great, you
yes
know?
Yes,
not having like, you know, the big, you know, ego of his, you know, characters is actually
yeah.
attractive. But
agreed.
God, two great more. You're killing me.
I know. It could be from any place in time. It could be, yeah. God, I know I really forced it on you.
Any place in time. Jesus. I don't know.
And again, it could be like a version of that person. Like, part of me feels like the, you know, our American treasure, Mark Twain. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't know what kind of, I guess I don't know enough about him to know what kind of a companion he would be.
Mm-hmm.
But my version of what he would be based on his writing is the one I want. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, it doesn't have to be reasonable in that sense.
Yeah. God.
Like, I would never pick Picasso as a fan of his relationship to women.
Right. Oh, my
but
God.
But I guess I didn't know that and I just loved his art, it would be like, he's the painter I want him to be as a human.
Right. Yeah. Oh, this is killing me because I'm like going through all these names. I'm like, do I want sexy times with those people? Like, no.
But that's why it could be, I don't have this person for this reason. I have it for this reason.
I see. I don't know. Yeah, it's, oh, you're killing me here.
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, this one is difficult. I'm like, are there cartoon characters?
I don't know. That. Like, what about?
Thinking of cartoons that I've liked. Yeah, gosh, I'm just throwing up blanks on all this.
What about like someone from like a Star Trekkie kind of like a Jean-Luc Picard?
Oh, Picard. Okay, I mean, let's totally put down Picard. Dreamboat. Yeah. All right, that's a good one. Yeah.
And might I add, a wonderful human being in real life. Patrick Stewart.
Yes,
is
I know.
The best.
Yeah. So he passes the Daniel Craig test.
Oh my God.
Awesome.
I forgot to write Jean-Luc Picard. I just wrote Dreamboat. What a dork. Oh no. Okay.
So yeah, Picard and Daniel Craig, both people who are awesome actors and awesome in real life. Okay.
Great.
Now I have to come up with a third person. Awesome actor, awesome.
We're getting
in real
there
life.
Together. You
we're getting
me.
There. This is really pulling teeth.
Let's see. I mean, you got your sort of your Carl Sagans, you got your, that's maybe, I don't know, that's somebody that I'm like, oh, to just like sit on a beach and talk about the world with him for a while. I don't know that I would want to like roll around in the sack, but yeah. That'll probably be okay. who else from the film this is fun for me because now I'm getting to like stretch
yeah you have
my
to help me brainstorm
because
I'm like
now because
so
I've taken these two people and I agree with both. I'm wondering, oh, you know who else I do love is Clive Owen. I think he's also like a soft-spoken dude.
He wouldn't be on my list though.
Okay. Fair enough. He's another one. I use him as an example because I felt the exact same way about him as I did Daniel Craig, which was like I knew he was like hot shit and I had never seen him in anything, and I was like, another good-looking British guy, everybody.
Okay.
And then I started seeing him.
I'll throw
like,
this one
great.
Out just because it's like an easy one to do. And it definitely falls in the category of maybe not physical attraction, but like nerd attraction.
Yep.
I mean, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Oh, like, definitely. Yeah. Great job.
Yeah. Like, he's
besides,
someone
he
where...
he might surprise you.
He's someone
person.
Where it's like, you know, yeah, I like... at first glance, I don't know, but like then when he starts talking, you're like, okay,
the charisma,
you're kind of sexy.
He is. I don't know if you saw that there was a thing that they did that was live from whatever London stage. I don't know if it was like an opera stage. Certainly, this wasn't an opera, but they did a live broadcasted version of Frankenstein that he alternated with Johnny Lee Miller, who's somebody that I don't think of as being a phenomenal actor because the stuff that he does on our kind of commercial American side is all sort of like, oh, okay. But they switched from being the doctor and the monster on various nights. Mm-hmm. But they both did some of the most phenomenal physical, almost dance work as the monster.
Well, and
his voice
is just like amazing.
Oh yeah,
like his voice is everything.
He's really something else. Okay, great.
Okay.
I'm gonna move on to something easier. Hopefully,
I hope.
Okay, next category is well, I guess this is a question that's kind of come up because of things we've talked about, and this is sort of a. I could see you liking this. I could see exactly the reason why you wouldn't like this. But this idea of the first rush of an experience, if you could revisit, if you could sort of experience it afresh, three things that you kind of experienced in your life, whether it's the first time you see X building in person, you sort of get that, or it's the first time you hear electronic music, three things that would be nice to sort of be able to have that first time with once more.
Yeah. No, I think some of them, we definitely already talked about. Yeah, so hearing electronic music for the first time, going to a rave for the first time. And I think getting told that I got the job at NASA again.
Like, absolutely.
Oh my God, I remember I tried, like, I just immediately, like, you know, they're like, great, we'll offer it to you. And like, so yeah, we'll sign paper, da da da. I'm like, great, cool. Keeping my cool, totally normal.
Yeah.
I walk to my car as slowly as I can, close the car door. And then I'm like dialing my mom, going like, Mom, you have to pick up.
Oh,
like the first
so
thing
great.
Is like, I had to like scream to my mom, oh my God, I got a job at
yes.
NASA.
I amazing. Think we, well, I feel like we live in a world where it starts to feel dangerous to allow ourselves to have those feelings sometimes because it almost does seem too good to be true. And so I really am a fan and a proponent of like, let yourself celebrate. Like, even if you got fired the next day, let yourself celebrate, like have that moment of, you know, euphoria.
Yeah.
Don't worry about whether or not it's all going to fall apart. I'm saying that to myself as much as anything. Okay. And then the final one is three alternate forms of transportation. So you can get around if you would like to be limited to physics, as Bill Nye the Science Guy would say. But if you don't and you want to go into the world of the magical and we figured out how to teleport, you can include that as well. Three ways to get around that aren't typical.
Well, as an American, I'm going to say high-speed rail.
Great.
Like, I love trains.
Me
I love being
too.
On trains, and it would be really great if we could just go everywhere with
Wouldn't
trains.
It? Love
I don't,
it.
I don't like flying.
Yeah.
Like, I love traveling, but I don't like flying. Trying to think what else I would enjoy. I mean, even though I don't enjoy flying, I'm curious because so Virgin Galactic, you know, which is doing like suborbital space flights, the ultimate goal for Richard Branson is not actually space tourism with that. It's actually to be able to travel from like, San Francisco to Australia, you know, in, I don't know, 30 minutes, an hour. I don't know how long, but like no time. So traveling anywhere in the world with minimal time, which is actually, you know, within the laws of physics, but we haven't gotten there yet.
Sure.
So I'd be curious, even though I don't like flying, what it would be like to do suborbital space flights to specifically go to other parts of the Earth.
That's great.
And then, trying to think. I don't know. Let's just say flying cars. Why not?
Great.
Why not?
Great.
Because of a lot of reasons. But that's why.
But for the purposes here, why not?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, this is just the part where I do like my little doodle that that ends up creating a number that I will use to sort of make eliminations.
Right.
So you just tell me when to stop. It can be very fast. Can be,
okay.
I mean, I would say don't take too long. But. Okay. Tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay. I'm going to pause this, do this very important series of calculations.
Yeah.
Nope,
yeah,
no
this
calculating.
Is so enough. Science.
I will come back with your 100% guaranteed fictitious MASH future. I said this is great, like I took credit for this, even though they were all your answers, and that's why you have such a wonderful fake MASH future. Okay, number one, I want to congratulate you on your unlimited supply with zero health ramifications whatsoever of mac and cheese.
Yay!
In all its forms. I don't know what that means, but in all its forms, in all versions of cheese and pasta that you want. I think that this is something that you will enjoy very much indulging in with your alternate universe companion, Jean-Luc Picard, a.k.a.
Nice.
Patrick Stewart.
Nice. Yep.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
I feel great about that one. You too enjoy a mansion that, by the way, has excellent heating on Enceladus.
Perfect.
And when you're not doing that, you don't have to take him everywhere you go. It could be that you're saving lemurs in Madagascar on your own. You don't have to have him with you. You're an independent woman. If you want him there, he's there. Just like that. You all these different places that you're able to get around, I want you to rest assured that we have mastered flying cars. So that's a wonderful way of transporting yourself. And you can also revisit for the very first time again when you got the job at NASA.
Nice.
So very well done. Ariel, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thank you.
This has been such a treat. Where can people find you? We talked about Space Hack.
I'm Ariel Waldman on on everything. So ArielWaldman.com, on Twitter, on YouTube. I'm just starting my YouTube channel. I've got like 100 subscribers. It's really adorable.
Get in on the ground level, everybody.
Ground level. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I'm kind of everywhere as Ariel Waldman.
Outstanding. And guys, of course, I'm up at SF Sketchfest. I thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you next time on the podcast.
As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.